Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With Masterclass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch Masterclass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from Masterclass to their lives. Masterclass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
Good morning, Mr. Hernandez. How you doing?
Good morning. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to everybody out there.
Yeah, it is. You know, people know we're in Hilton Head, and it's supposed to be like 75 degrees today. So it's not the white Christmas that you hear in Holiday Inn and all of that stuff, but it is Christmas nonetheless.
Oh, I've heard there's going to be a snowstorm coming up north in New York. My guy that watches my house up there put the de-icers. I have flat roof.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. So around all the scuppers, he put around the de-icers.
Oh, boy.
The bricks.
Yeah. Glad I don't have to think about that. Although, you know, sometimes it gets cold enough here and your pipes can freeze,
yep.
You know, and they're not used to that. So we go from there. Okay, let's, first of all, we had a caller last hour who said, ask Keith about playing left field back in 1981 and 82. And I'm going, God, no. To me, he was always a first baseman. I didn't even know that. So what happened?
I actually played right field a game, too, in Cincinnati. I think George Hendrick got a day off. Whitey was the manager. He also put me in left field for what reason, I don't know. And I actually played pretty well. I have a strong arm. And I actually robbed Gary Carter, hit a line drive in the gap that I ran down. And it was a little daunting. It's a big ballpark, Busch Stadium. And I loved the outfield. I played the outfield when I was in Little League as well as first base. Only, I think, 3 games. And what mitt I used, I have no recollection. I did not have an outfielder's mitt, so I had to borrow someone's.
Yeah.
You know, Whitey originally, when he took over the team, Ken Boyer was fired in 1980. Herzog took over midseason, managed us. We had a terrible year. We could hit, had no pitching. He managed us for around a month. And then he had the dual job of GM and then and manager, field manager. Red Shandies was the bench coach. Red took over managing, and Whitey watched upstairs as a general manager the remaining 2 months, 2.5 months of the season, evaluating. And he came out in the off season and said that he was going to move. He traded for Lonnie Smith from the Phillies, who was a left fielder, and we called him. Mm-hmm. And Lonnie was kind of ridiculed defensively. He wasn't a great outfielder. But Jim Cott always said he had good lateral movement. Jim didn't mind him out there because he can go to the line and to the gap and run things down. He didn't have a strong arm. But he was going to play Lonnie Smith in center field. And he came out publicly and said, everybody was going, center field, Lonnie Smith? And we didn't have Willie McGee. You know, we got midseason in 81 or 82. 81. And or maybe 82, I'm not sure. But anyway, I was going to go to left field, and he was going to move Ted Simmons to first base because he brought in his favorite, Darryl Porter.
To catch.
Darryl's a great guy, and Whitey had a real strong affection for him. And Ted Simmons originally said, okay, but I don't expect me to be Keith Hernandez at first base. And everybody in the press is going, okay, you're weakening yourself in three positions. You're putting Lonnie Smith, who's never played center field, in center field. You're putting me in left field, which I've never played since Little League. And you're putting Ted Simmons at first base. It just didn't make sense. And Simmons agreed to do it, and then all of a sudden, right before spring training, he backed out and said, I don't want to go there. So that kind of kiboshed those plans. And then Whitey wound up making the big trade, where he traded Raleigh Fingers and Ted Simmons and Pete Vukovich to the Brewers for Dave LaPointe and David Green. Larry Sorensen and Sixto Lescano was a huge trade. It was similar to what's been... It was that kind of seismic trade that what's happened this offseason with the Mets so far. You traded Ted Simmons, who was, you know, been there from the beginning and was a fan favorite. And it was the same, it reminds me of what's going on this offseason with the Mets.
Okay, well, I think we're going to be talking about that an awful lot as time goes on here. So let's grab a phone call. Mark is in North Carolina. We're in South Carolina. Mark, you're on the Fan with Keith Hernandez.
Hi, Keith. Hi, Richard. How you guys doing? I'm a longtime Met fan since 1972. Keith, my favorite player of all time was Rusty Staub, who we missed out having him greatly. And you also were nice enough in July of this year, I have a place in Atlanta, and you took a picture with me in front of a press elevator. So I appreciate that. I got to be able to get the picture with you. I wanted to talk about Edwin Diaz. You know, I'm not in favor of not having, I wish he would have signed with us, right? But I was questioning the way they used him. You know, it seemed that the Mets were always concerned about bringing him in with a runner on base, right, because of his leg kick. And it kind of limited him to just a ninth-inning pitcher. You couldn't bring him in extra innings because of the free runner. They didn't want to bring him in if it wasn't a clean inning. And I'm wondering if David Stearns looked at that and said, you know, the flexibility is gone by having him only be able to be a situational pitcher in one situation. So I'm wondering if that entered into the theory of why they wouldn't bring him back. Because,
well, you know, Mark, he did have some four-out saves. They did bring him in the eighth inning later in the season, so he did have that. But
I don't think that had anything to do with it. The days of Gossage coming out of the bullpen and Mike Marshall and Bruce Sutter coming in the eighth inning with the bases loaded or runners on first and second in a one-run game trying to save it and coming in with one out and a big jam and coming in, and that's when you can really test the reliever, and you couldn't afford to walk anybody. I mean, Whitey always said, if I got a reliever that comes in and it's ball four, I don't want him on my bullpen. So I don't think... It's changed with La Russa and Bobby Cox when they started doing one inning at a time, relievers starting an inning clean. And I think that in the minor leagues, they're not trained now to come in and pitch in those situations. When I was in the minor leagues, the guys in the bullpen came in. They made sure they came in jams, and that's how they found out who had the
right stuff.
The right stuff or not. Separate the men from the boys, so to speak. And it's just not in the game today. So I don't think that was a reason for the trade. I just know as much as you do what I read in the paper. I have no inside information of what's going on and the philosophy that's going forward. I will say this. I mean, what's happened is seismic, and David Stearns is not doing this willy-nilly. I mean, he's got a plan, and I don't know what it is. I'm not privy. And I'm very curious, just like the rest of the people out there, to see where this goes the remainder of the offseason.
Yeah. And I've been careful. We can't condemn what's gone on so far until we know what the roster is opening day. He may have some incredible trades, free agents. Who knows? But right now, they are not as good a team as they were last year, clearly. And, you know, the thing that gets me is you talk about run production. And you put a first baseman who's only played first base one pitch in his career and say, well, the Mariners, mid-season, they gave him some ground balls and taught him some footwork. Really? Is that position that easy, Keith?
I think it's outside of catching is probably the most underrated skill position that there is. A lot can go wrong, and if you got a butcher, if you got in our day, it was Dr. Strangelove, Dick Stewart.
Yeah,
Played for the Red Sox and was a great power hitter, but he couldn't catch a cold. And I always felt it's a bad throw. Base is loaded. Ball goes down the right field line. There's three runs are going to score. Also, from a psychological point of view, and you mentioned earlier, I heard you, about Pete. Pete was pretty adept at scooping. Pretty good, even though he fell on his fanny all the time. I don't know why. I could have told him how not to do that. But he was pretty adept at scooping. And that's critical. So from a psychological standpoint, from your infielders, to know that if I make an errant throw, I don't have to worry. And that takes a lot off their mind. As opposed to if you got a guy over there that is can't catch a cold, and that ball's down the right field line. Infielders can tighten up, particularly late and close.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a scary thing. So if you're talking about run prevention, you certainly don't have that. Let's go to Jim in Putnam County. You're on the Fan with Keith Hernandez. Jim?
Hi, Richard. Hi, Keith. Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
I'm 77 now, and I don't think I've ever been this depressed about the state of New York sports since the mid-60s, when the Yankee dynasty broke up. The Mets weren't good yet. The Knicks and Rangers weren't good yet. And, the Giants had fallen apart. Jets were coming on. I want to say that as far as Stearns, David Stearns goes, I liken it to a person who's been told, your battery's dead and you got four flat tires, and the person decides to rip out his carburetor and pistons. I just don't get what he's doing. I mean, the pitching was the problem. The starting pitching couldn't go long enough. The bullpen fell apart due to overwork. So I'm not really sure what he's doing. And Richard, you and I, when I used to call into the shows a long time ago, you and I always used to have little comments about music because I'm a very big music fan. So I'm going to ask you if you ever got to see Richard Thompson live. And did you know that the band had a Christmas song, which I'm going to post to your Facebook page?
Oh, yeah. I know that song very well. Christmas Must Be Tonight. That is a great song.
Really great song, yeah.
I never saw Richard Thompson. Did you ever see him, Keith?
No.
No, legendary guitarist and all of that. And, it's funny. We've been talking a lot of music. Keith and I have been talking a lot of music. And there are gaps in my knowledge. And I don't know. I don't think you have too many gaps in your knowledge.
I do.
Yeah. But certain bands and artists who everybody, this is the greatest band in the world. And I never got into them, never saw them. And yet there are obscure bands from 1970 who I can name and tell you how great they were. And people were, who? what are you talking about? So it's all in the ear of the beholder, right?
Gary Cohen is not only, like Howie, an encyclopedia on the Mets, he's also an encyclopedia on music. That he knows the musicians and the bands and going back, which his mind is just amazing. I'll bring up something and he'll know the band members. Mm-hmm. He's incredible.
Yeah. It's funny. I think I might have sent you an article that was in the Washington Post about seeing these bands before they go away. And they talked about The Who in Chicago and, you know, Earth, Wind & Fire. Of course, Maurice is no longer with them. But I don't want to see those bands in their 80s just like sitting in a wheelchair trying to do, you know, windmill stuff. I want to remember them in their great eras when they could really do it, as opposed to seeing, you know, and hey, look, we're in that age group, but I don't want to see them in that state. I don't know how you feel about that.
You know, I saw the Doobie Brothers, and they're first, before they turned into like a jazz rock band.
Yeah, for Michael McDonald.
And, I'm Living on the Fault Line. Yeah, that's when they started. That was their first, that's when they made the transition. But they had Toulouse Street and Captain and Me, which I thought were two terrific albums. And I went and saw them in Palm Beach at the Javits Center. I'm thinking of New York. I forget what the auditorium's name is, downtown Palm Beach. And it was... They didn't play any Michael McDonald jazzy stuff. They just played their rock and roll. And it was wonderful, but it was just didn't have the same feel. Everything's so polished as opposed to them being on a stage like in Fillmore West. Mm. I mean, you guys had Fillmore East. We had Fillmore West on the West Coast. I never went to Fillmore West. My dad wouldn't let me go to concerts because he figured I'd get in trouble, and he was probably right.
Yeah. You could get high just walking in there with the contact high, right?
Plus, it was not a good neighborhood, Fillmore. It was a pretty dangerous neighborhood.
Okay.
Back then.
We got Kevin on the Jersey Shore with us now. Kevin, you're on the Fan. Keith Hernandez.
Good morning, Keith. Good morning, Richard. Merry Christmas. You know, Richard, as to what you said, like, I used to be a big Genesis fan, even like with Peter Gabriel left and Phil Collins took over. Mm-hmm. And I refused to go see that last go around where they had a wheel. Poor Phil out in a wheelchair, and or maybe he didn't wheel him out, but he had to sit the whole time, and it was just like, you know, grasping for something that's not there anymore. Anyway, thank you guys for being on Christmas Day. Keith, I need to know your 2 cents about the 87 Mets. Now, we all know the Terry Pendleton home run. I remember that home run. I remember where I was on the east side when he hit that. But talk to us about the loss of Ray Knight that year, even though it did come down to a last series with the Cardinals. How much was Ray Knight's presence missed in 87 and 88? And again, guys, Merry Christmas, and thank you for taking my call.
Well, the one thing about Ray was that Ray was healthy in 86, and Ray was getting older. And I just really feel that I played against Ray. I'd known Ray since I was 18 years old. We played against each other. He was with the Tampa Reds, and I was with the St. Petersburg Cardinals, and we were both 18, 19 years. I was 18, just out of high school. And then we skipped each other. We weren't in the same AA league, but then we played AAA. He was with the Indianapolis Reds, and I was with the Tulsa Oilers. So I had played in the minor leagues with Ray. I knew what kind of player he was. Remember, he replaced Pete Rose. No easy task, and he did a heck of a job. He was a winner. As it turned out, you had Howard Johnson and Kevin Mitchell waiting in the wings, and you got what you got from Ray. Ray was so critical to our team. Number one, his leadership. He was so fiery, and he was just a fighter, and it made us more another guy with grit that was really, I think, was personified our team. As well as the talent. When he went on the next year, he had injuries. He just didn't have the year. I got to believe that he was not happy where he knew. I think he went to Boston.
Baltimore.
And I don't think he was happy there. And he was disappointed because he really was. How can you not be happy on an 86 team that won 108 games? And it was everybody got along so well on that team. But the decision was you had Howard Johnson and Kevin Mitchell. The Kevin Mitchell trade was just awful. Howard, what hurt us and made us more vulnerable, to left-hand pitching because we were left-handed strong, even in 86. We had a better lineup, a more dangerous lineup against right-handers than we did against lefties. Ray gave us the right-handed bat. When Howard became our third baseman, and I'm tapping on there, dude, I won't do that on the desk. Howard at that point was not a good right-hand hitter. He learned to become a good right-hand hitter, but he was not. So that was a weakness that came to our ball club after 86, that we became more vulnerable to left-handers. And then Howard got better as the years went on. But he was always a better left-hand hitter. But he really made great improvements. So we lost in that seventh hole when you didn't have a DH. To me, is the most underrated position in the lineup because that hitter is hitting with the eighth hitter behind him. He's hitting in behind the four, five, and six, which there's always opportunities to drive in runs. And he's going to be pitched around if you've got a 220 shortstop or second baseman hitting eighth with the pitcher following. Now, the DH has changed all that now. And you needed a veteran in that seven hole with a good eye at the plate, a good line drive hitter, and a clutch hitter. And that's what Ray brought. He was very much overlooked as far as the success of that 86 team.
Yeah, and people remember that fight with Eric Davis at third base, that slide, you know, and a lot of people said that was typical of the Mets and how they were fighters. Let's go to Pat in Suffern. You're on the Fan. Pat?
Morning, guys.
Morning.
How's it going? Hey, morning, Keith. Keith, amazing honor to talk to you. You too, Richard. But I just got to tease a couple of quick questions about the 86 Mets. He was the last caller was talking about Ray Knight. I thought that I want to ask you actually, Kevin Mitchell, was that a bad trade in retrospect?
Well, in hindsight, definitely. He turned out to be an MVP, did he not?
Yeah.
With the Giants.
You know, I remember that brawl that Richard was just talking about, and he was right in the thick of it. I mean,
Kevin was another one of those, you know, street tough guys. He's a super guy. He's a very dear friend and lovely, great teammate. And I don't know what Frank was thinking, but, you know, he evidently made the two moves, bang, bang. I mean, real quick, got rid of let Ray go and traded Kevin to the Padres. But, you know, don't forget, he played shortstop, too. Whenever and Howard played shortstop because they were athletic, and they only did it when Sid Fernandez pitched because Sid was a fly ball pitcher. And Davey would always put either would take Rafael out. Rafael that year in 86, I think hit 218, did not have a good year with the bat, played a great shortstop for us. That gave us, Davey wanted to load up. I think he had a little bit of that Earl Weaver American League in him. He wanted to, I got Sid out there who throws fly ball, so I'm going to run Kevin and Hojo. So Hojo would play against right-handers, and it would be Kevin at shortstop that would play against the left-handers. And they both did well. They both did really surprisingly well playing shortstop. That was Robbie Robertson, right?
Yeah,
and I had a hard time with them. There are songs I really like, and then there's songs I do not like. So when like you get an album of theirs, it's like you have to – I always felt I had to cherry pick through the album.
Yeah.
But you know what? As you get older and you take the time and – listen to the album through. I always love picking up the songs that weren't the hits that are on an album, you know, and they're always sometimes the best songs.
And I found listening in headphones, you can hear subtleties that even with great speakers like you have, you don't pick up on. But when you have headphones, you hear all those little things that they do. And some of them are pretty amazing, yeah. You know, but talking music, I think Coach Ralph here wants to talk music from Long Beach. Ralph, you're on the Fan. Or not. Maybe he gave up on us. All right, let's move to Shirley. Don't call me Shirley. And Poughkeepsie, you're on the Fan with Keith. Shirley?
Do you know how many times I've heard that joke?
yeah,
I'm
I know.
70. three.
You sound irritated.
Yeah.
No, it's cool. It's cool. But, Keith, I'm actually a native of the Bay Area like you, so I kind of followed your career a little bit just, you know, from the interest there. But, and I appreciate you mentioning all my Giants on you talking about Dave LaPointe and Kevin Mitchell. But here's the thing. I just wondered, did you get another kitty cat? Yeah, my cat, Swan, he died the same month as your kitty, Pudgy. And I just wondered if you, I haven't got another cat yet. I'm just, you know?
Haji, we put him down November, so it's been a little over a year. And yeah. We've got a flat coat retriever that is now almost ready to turn two. It's our fourth flat coat dog, and he's 95 pounds. And this one has really been a chore. He's really headstrong. He's powerful. We're working on him. And I just can't get a kitten right now with him. So yeah. Once he becomes the good dog that he grows out of his puppyhood, so to speak, and settles down, then I'll get another Bengal. Now, the big question would be,
Bengal.
I love the Bengals. The question is, will I get a male or a female? I mean, Haji just destroyed the house when he was in Southampton. I had to retake I got picture windows in my master bathroom and all the squirrels and the chipmunks that come out in spring, and there's no foliage yet. And he just went bat guano and just, you know, lifted up his tail, and you know what he did. He had to rip up the walls and do it over again. So I don't know if I'm going to get a male this time. I might get a female.
Was he neutered? You didn't neuter him? Or?
Oh, we did. And the vet just said, this is one macho cat.
Yeah. Let's go to Jay in Old Lyme, Connecticut. You're on the Fam. Keith Hernandez. Go ahead, Jay.
Thank you very much. Merry Christmas, and thank you for taking my call. Richard, I did happen to see Earth, Wind, and Fire about 3 weeks ago at the Mohegan Sun, and I never saw them in their heyday, but I can tell you Philip Bailey is still fantastic. It was a remarkable show.
Oh, that's great. Great to hear.
And I miss your Saturday show very much. Keith, it seems to me the Mets have kind of a real problem with players like, you have Mauricio and Beatty and Vientos and Acuna. I mean, what do you foresee happening in terms of maybe trading some or many of these guys? And what would you give up to try to get maybe somebody like Scooble for a one-year rental?
Wow. Well, Scooble is going to take a lot. They're not going to just hand him away. Mauricio, as we know, I think has a lot of talent, but Phil Acuna and him really had a wasted year last year playing in backup. Young kids playing in a backup role because they were off to that great start. And it was, as that season progressed last year, when they started their slide in June, you figured, okay, they're going to come out of it. You know, you can't just have a season where you every month you have a winning record. You're going to have your down period, but it just never turned around. And I think it was really a lost year for both Mauricio and Acuna, and particularly Mauricio. Mauricio really, as you could tell, just had a difficult time with the down breaking ball, the curveball. He could not lay off of it. He was swinging at it in the dirt. And I know how things happen when you lose your confidence. Everything speeds up. The ball looks like it's coming in 200 miles an hour. And it was a lost year. Hopefully he played winter ball and Acuna played winter ball. I'm sure they did. They need to play. Acuna's got kind of a long swing, and he's tough for him to be a bench player. You know, the bench player was always, when I was there, was the Greg Grosses, when Davey Lopes, when he got older. Jay Johnstones. I don't know if you're familiar with these names.
I remember him well, yes.
Yeah, they were all veteran players that knew how to play and get 250 at-bats in the course of a season and be the big pinch hitter. It takes a veteran, I think, to do that. It has the maturity and the confidence. It's a tough job for a young player. Now, I'm not confident that Detroit's going to give up Scooble. I really don't. They're going to ask for an arm and a leg and maybe both legs.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm not confident in that. And what would you have to give up? I mean, the Mets pitching right now, are you going to give up your young? Do you give up Sproat, Tong? You know, where are the Mets going to go? It seems to me like this is a transition that's going on right now, and it's going to be a transition to youth. And so it seems to me their bargaining chips are the youth. So I don't know what they're going to do.
All right, let's go to Ari and Valley Cottage. You're on the fan, Ari.
Hey, good morning, guys. Good morning, Keith. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Before I ask you my question, Keith, I'm just hoping David Stearns doesn't trade away you, Gary, and Ron, because that would just be the icing on the cake.
Well, I don't think he has any say in that, really.
No, and also the Wilpons still own the network, so it would be the Wilpons that would get rid of us.
Yeah, I know.
So the Mets have no say.
You guys are the best part of the Mets organization. But anyway, Keith, you've been with the Mets organization a while. You've been in a clubhouse before. You've been in the Mets clubhouse before. You know, there was a big change between what we felt. I was looking on the outside with the team from 24 to 25. Do you think there was a big problem with the locker room this past year and what Stearns has done to trade away Alonso, Nimmo, and McNeil, the core of the Mets? Or do you think it was more of a, a skill and a run prevention or a combination of both? Like, your thoughts on that?
I don't know. You know what? The clubhouse is so big today. At Shea Stadium, we had really no place to hide. And we were always at our locker, and we only had in the back of there was only one little room that the press couldn't go, and it was probably had a lousy couch, it had a cafeteria table and like a little 15-inch TV, and that's where we could go, and it was very uncomfortable. So we were always at our locker. Today, the locker is bigger than our locker, much bigger. Although Shea had a nice home field, we had plenty of space. I didn't mind our clubhouse. But they have a back room that is where the kitchen is, where the chefs are that cook for them. They have a pool table. It's just as big as, just almost as big as the clubhouse where they change. And then behind that is the weight room. And you know these guys are all in the weights. So it's a bigger, area than where they dress. You go in the clubhouse. There's meetings every day. You walk in. There's a players' meeting. There's no players in the clubhouse. So a lot of times I walk into the clubhouse at home in particular, and there's maybe 2-3 guys at their locker. And it just got to a point where I just didn't go down there. So I didn't really have a pulse of what was going on in that clubhouse. You can be with the players more on the road because they're smaller clubhouses and they're more at their locker, and that's when you can really kind of go in there and see the group. It was obvious, I think, last year in the beginning that Soto was having a hard time adjusting, and I don't think that was a positive. He eventually came out of it, but I think that's ironically that's when they were playing great. And Soto was struggling. So, it's a funny game. It's hard to figure out. But I do think it's a combination of everything. I don't know if, I only know what I read in the paper. I know that one thing that raised my eyebrow was when Soto came out in the midseason and said that Marte was the leader. And that kind of got my attention. I went, was that a slap at Lindor? I don't know. I'm not going to speculate. But to me, that raised an eyebrow. And that's the only sign that I saw that maybe, and I have no idea. I think it's a combination of that they wanted to improve the defense as well. There's a whole mixture of things going here. But obviously, this is an entirely new makeup on this team. And the two guys at the top that they're going to build around is Soto and Lindor.
Let's hope they get along. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. Our telephone number, 888-808-1019. Richard Neer, Keith Hernandez on the fan. You a big Elvis fan?
I was always jealous of Elvis, because Anne Margaret. Oh. Was she a hot tamale or what? Sorry, folks. She was sizzling.
Oh, yeah. She's still out there.
Oh, I know. She was a dancer. And, oh,
she was talented.
She was just full of energy. And I was a young kid when Elvis was, obviously. So she got my attention.
And Joe Namath's attention, too, apparently. Okay. Geza in Middletown, New Jersey is with us. Geza, good morning and Merry Christmas.
Good morning. Merry Christmas to both of you and your families. I just had a question for Keith. One of the things I really enjoy about the perspective you and Ron bring to games is that you're not hesitant about being critical when you see a breakdown in fundamentals. I have a theory about why that happened. If I had time, I'd be happy to share it. But I'd like to get Keith's perspective as to whether he can identify kind of like a time when he saw that going downhill. And if he did, if he has any thoughts as to why that might have happened.
Okay.
No, because it was so gradual. It was a drip, drip. And then finally, I remember 2 months into the slide, you know, Gary's always great with research, and he's got that catalog brain, and he mentioned what their record was since when they started. Was it June? He started, and it was like, you know, 15 games or 12 games under 500, and I went, and I didn't realize that because the season goes by so slowly. So I hadn't, it didn't probably hit until August because that, you know, you got 2 months of playing bad baseball, but you always felt, okay, they're going to get it out of their system and they're going to come around and get hot. And they never did. So it's just one of the peculiarities you can't put your finger on.
Well, can you point to an era when fundamentals, like you're always talking about the fundies, when that players came up and they just weren't ready? They just didn't, like, you know, you see them make plays and you go, that's a little leaguers would make that play. Is it the developmental system with the team, or what is it that keeps them from doing executing?
Well, I always said the second division teams, the teams, when they come to town and you play a three game series, they'll show you why they're a second division team. They're not solid in the details of the game. I think you should become a veteran. To me, what always scared me was that first and third and a rundown with the runner on third. And, you know, you're always taught to, if it's a pickoff, sometimes they did it on purpose and they get in a rundown, try to steal a run. And that really, I never figured that one out. And I remember the Cardinals in minor leagues worked on that. Now, the Cardinals were so, with George Kissel, were so involved in teaching the fundamentals of the game. Plus, I had my father, who was an ex-player, and so my brother and I had a step, had a leg up. But that was always one particular play that bothered me. And then I realized at one point, and I don't know when, and it was when I came to the Mets, was that I didn't have to look. If I ran the runner out, gave it to Rafi or Wally or Tuff, when they're running back to me, I didn't have to look at them. I could look a little bit of an angle to where the shortstop's position is, so I can see the third base runner and also see the Wally or whoever's coming back with the ball. And I realized this one day, I don't know why, I figured when that runner gets a certain point down the line, he's dead. And I just went to the three of them, and I said, just trust me when you're running back. I don't want you to worry about that runner. Just listen to me, and I'll point. So I had a voice that always carried. So it was either run them, home, or third. So I directed them. When I said home, I pointed home. And when I said run them, I pointed home. and I also like pointed at them, using my, all three of them, I signaled my left hand, then they would break off. And I just said, just trust me, I've got it. And that just eliminated that whole play. But it took me, what, when I came to the Mets, I was always, what, I was 30 years old. It took me that long. And I just, it just came. And I think it just, as the game slows down, you become more confident.
That's when you get it. Yeah.
So that's just one example.
We got 1 hour in the books, another one to come. The Odyssey Sports Minute right now is brought to you by your local Ford stores.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is a reminder that shoes are a gift. Literally. So unwrap something good. Like boots that inspire your next big adventure. Or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in. Or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes. They're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you so you can surprise them. Find shoes that get you and everyone on your list at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or DSW.com.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
So let's get right back to our calls, and I'm shocked at the tenure of the calls today. I expected a lot of current day Mets, but people are going back to the past, as Hector in Washington Heights would like to do. Hector, you're on the Fan.
Hey, Richard, thanks for taking the call, and thanks Keith for doing it. Merry Christmas to you guys.
Thank you.
And I guess why I don't want to talk about the current Mets is because it's really disheartening to talk about these guys right now, and just because we don't know what the heck is really going on, right? And it's obvious David Stearns didn't think he could win with his team, and he's going a different path. And how long that's going to take and what that path is, we're still waiting to find out. But I have a question for Keith, if I may, because with everything that's gone on with the Mets, you guys have touched, Keith talked a little bit earlier about how it's different now with the clubhouse, and these guys have so much room to spread out and all that. But there's talk about the 86 Mets, and you guys talked earlier about the fight, Eric Davis and Ray Knight and all that stuff. And the 86 Mets was, to me, known as a team that was a fighting team, right? I was 10 years old at that time, so there's stuff that I remember, there's stuff that you learn as you go and all that. But it was a team that I thought, and when I hear you guys speak, a team that got along. You guys fought against everybody else, but you guys went out and hung out together and, had parties, or whatever the case may be. But there's people now saying, oh, the 86 Mets hated each other, too. Who cares if the current Mets don't like each other? And I just, if Keith could just shed some light on that and really tell us what the 86 Mets were about and how they got along and all that stuff. Because it bothers me as, a big fan of that team, that I think it's being misrepresented a little bit.
If people are thinking that, it is being misrepresented. We got along great. Everybody fit in. And, you know, we're with each other for 7 months pretty much every day if you count spring training. We all got along. And, you know, there were certain cliques that went in their direction. But basically, we had great camaraderie. It was just a good, solid group. Now, that being said, you look at the Yankees when they were the Bronx Zoo, they did not get along and they won. The Oakland A's,
oh yeah,
they did not get along. And ironically, Reggie Jackson was on both those teams. Whether he was the straw that stirred the drink, as he was quoted, but those two teams didn't get along. And they won. And evidently, going way, way back, I mean, Rogers Hornsby was supposed to be just a really difficult, difficult player, teammate. And, you know, he played on championship teams. Last guy to hit 400 in the National League.
Can one guy disrupt chemistry? In other words, you know, we talked about Reggie, who had a big ego and thought very highly of himself, and, you know, justifiably, he was a great player. But can one guy come into a team and disrupt the whole chemistry because of his self-importance, his ego, whatever?
It can happen, and it depends how it's policed and whether it's a contagion and it goes into a certain clique. Then you get a divided clubhouse, a divided, in the game, a divided bench. I felt that the 1980 Cardinal team was very much divided, and it was much to our the demise of that team. We did not have a good year that year. That was probably the one team that really there was no cohesion, and there was separation in groups. So, yeah, but, you know, you're not going to get along with everybody, and you don't have to go out and hang out with them after a game when you're on the road. If you don't, you know, that I can count in 17 years, I can count on one hand that many teammates that I disliked. And disliked is the proper word, not hate or despise, but they were just, I guess, maybe asocial or whatever. And I just disliked them, and I just didn't hang around with them.
Well, there were always stories about you and Gary Carter were on opposite sides, and philosophically, maybe, but you guys got along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, well, Gary was one of those guys, and I've said this in the past, that when you played against him, you know, with all the fist pumping, and, you know, he was the face of the Montreal Expos, and he was one of the guys when you went into Montreal, you just liked playing against him. As a teammate, he was great. Yeah. And, you know, you get to know someone. You know, you're not competing against each other, trying to beat each other. You're now a brethren. You're on the same ship, and we got the same goals. And Gary was great. And Gary was, you know, played hard every day. I had no issue with Gary.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Dennis in Yonkers. Dennis, you're on the Fan.
Keith, Richard, how are you both?
Hey,
if we're good. If we put the S on the name, Richard, it's Keith Richards, I guess. But
well, there you go.
Merry, Merry Christmas to the both of you. Keith, you and I bumped into each other on the East Side a long time ago, a couple of times, cursory hello, but I never got to ask you this. And being a demented Giant fan, I've always kept in my craw 41 years ago, 84. I don't know if you remember this, AB, but it bothers me to this day. 84, extra innings, Candlestick Park, one of those cold May nights, and you had just come to the Mets. Second and third, one out in the 11th, I believe it was one out. First open, Frank Robinson was one of the 10 best players I ever saw, literally. He was phenomenal.
Yes.
But one of the worst managers. and he walked Jose Oquendo, I think it was his second year of playing ball, a 5'10", 150-pound shortstop who could barely hit a ball 250 feet in the air, to face you with Mark Davis on the mound. Mark Davis, of course, would be a Cy Young winner in 89, And he was in the trade with Kevin Mitchell, and Mitch won a MVP for the Giants in 89 that same year, so it was a wild trade. But that night, he was 5 years from the Cy Young, and brought you in, and I said, Frank, what are you doing? Hernandez is going to drill one up the middle, put the ball in play, drill one up the middle, and I think it was a 1-1 count, might have been 0-1, fly ball to left, right through a Gale. No, that Gale, and as you know, in Candlestick, blew from left to right, and you drove it right through the Gale, sack fly, won the game, and I'm screaming for Robinson's head after the game. Do you happen to remember that, A.B.?
What he no, did? I don't. I'm glad it was a sacrifice fly. Mark Davis had one of the great curveballs I've ever faced, and he threw hard, and the fastball ran in on you. Left-hand hitter ran away from right-handers. He was no fun to hit off of, but he loved his breaking ball. He never had faith in his fastball for whatever reason, and he threw hard. And he just threw the breaking ball. So I would, if he threw me a fastball, I just took it. And I looked out over the plate because he's going to throw me the curveball. He's going to throw it away. And I'm geared fastball on that breaking ball. And a sacrifice fly, all you got to do is lift it. I mean, I always wonder how these players today have such a hard time with sacrifice flies. The one at bat, I'll be real brief. I remember off of Mark Davis. This is when he was on top of his game. Davey gives me an off day at Candlestick Park. It's a day game. We're losing. Larry Boa is on the team, so it had to be 88. And we're on that last August West Coast swing. We start in San Francisco. We're losing. And Boa is on first base, and he rounds third too far, and the ball's cut off, and he's thrown out at third. Davey pinch hits me off of Davis. That next inning, I'm not sure, and a man on base, we're down by a run. Mark, the reason why I remember this, he threw me two straight fastballs up and in that tied me up. I check swing, and I had no chance, and I'm 0-2, and I'm going, oh, boy. So that's one of the few times in my career where I said, he can't throw me three straight fastballs. So I looked curveball, and if he'd have thrown me a fastball, I would have been one of the dead as a doornail. And sure enough, he threw me a curveball, and he hung it, and I hit it in the upper deck halfway up in Candlestick Park. It was like the eighth inning, and it won the game, and that was a big win for us to start that road trip. It was the second game of the series, I think. I could be wrong. Boa, after the game, goes up to my locker. He goes, I owe you a dinner. I'm taking you out to dinner. So that's the one at bat I remember off Mark Davis.
Well, how many times have we seen it, and especially this year with the Mets? First and third, one out. And, okay, sacrifice flag, get the one run. Nope. Hard ground ball, second base, double play, inning over. We saw a lot. And is it just situational, or what are they thinking there instead of just sack fly?
It seems like it's more so, I'll revert to Gary Cohen. I mentioned on the air, and Gary must have gone home and researched it. It's the same percentage of our day of success, and which was surprising to me. And but look what happened in the World Series. Toronto had, in game 6 and 7, had three opportunities, two late with a sacrifice fly to win game 6, and one late to win the game in game 7, and they all failed.
Mm. And they were the situational hitting team, you know, the ones that did it, contact team. Let's go to Scott in Miami. You're on the Fan. Scott.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Hey.
Keith, I just want to thank you. What you do, bridging the gap between generations of Met fans. My dad grew up watching you play, and now me and my brothers, we watch you on TV every night, and it's just something very easy and very cool for us to connect over, and you make Mets games much more enjoyable for us, and I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Secondly, I think that we're overreacting a little bit to the Mets offseason. I'm saying we stepped back last year. They're a team coming off an NLCS. They came within two games of the World Series. They essentially replaced Pete Alonso with Juan Soto. They had no intention of Pete coming back. And then this offseason, they replaced Juan Soto with Jorge Polanco. and Brandon Immel with, and Jeff McNeil with Marcus Semien. I think if we kind of take out last season, which was an anomaly, having Pete on the roster, which I think is something David Stearns didn't really want, they are a better team than the team that went to the NLCS two seasons ago. I think we're overreacting a little bit, saying they're significantly worse. They're not as good. Last year's team won 83 games. Obviously, they can add starting pitching and some relief help, but I really don't think the team's as bad as we make it out to be.
Well, my opinion is that, you add a couple of pitchers to this team, strengthen the bullpen, and you could have gone basically with the same team and made the playoffs, won 89 games like they did the year before. But that team is another year older, and I think that's what Stearns is trying to get, younger. He doesn't want long-term contracts for guys over 30, and he wants control over these young players. So, Keith, your thoughts on that. But seems to me he just doesn't want 35-year-old guys on the team, despite trading for Semien, who's 35.
Well, and I think that he certainly didn't want to give Pete a five-year deal. They weren't going to go there. So that's part of their philosophy. It's going to be hard to replace Pete's bat. And I don't think that's my feeling, and it's just my feeling, and I could be dead wrong. I just didn't feel that Pete was Stearns' kind of player.
Yeah.
And always felt that way. So there you have it. Pete's gone off to Baltimore. You're trying to get younger and better defense, but, Semien brings you a gold glove, but he's 35. He's going to be 35 this year, I believe. He's not a spring chicken. He's coming off of an off year. I always feel that, too, it's that gamble you take, I think, general managers. You give a player that's a good player and give him a new environment and a new challenge. And you hope that he comes to life with the new challenge. It's a new fan base, new ballpark. And it's a new challenge. It was that way for me with the Mets. I kind of got stale in St. Louis when in 82 we won. I had, up to that point before 82, I had accomplished every individual. I won a batting title. I won an MVP. I was an all-star. I was a gold glove. The one thing that I hadn't attained was, and it was a team accomplishment, was a World Series. So I came back in 83, and I was kind of lackluster. I remember going up to George Hendrick and saying, in May, and I said, George, I'm just not motivated. It's like I've accomplished everything in this game. And I remember George telling me, I had great respect for George Hendrick. He said, everybody goes through it, Keith. You'll get past this. You will find a way to get it back on gear. Don't worry. Well, Whitey traded me in June, and I went to the Mets, and it was just a great brand new challenge for me, and it really, aided my career.
Can work the other way too. I mean, look at Ryan Helsley, who was terrific in St. Louis, closer, and he comes to the Mets and throwing batting practice, basically.
Well,
guys like that.
Yeah, well, he's adios too. We heard from St. Louis that he was hanging breaking balls all year long. And a lot of times I think that management thinks that they can. I love it when they say, oh, we worked on him and retooled his swing in the off season. Hey, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. It's the swing you grew up with. It's hard to make a radical change. I can see changes in philosophy, thinking, but you're going to turn around and tell me, well, we changed his swing and in 6 months of an off season, I guarantee if the minute he goes into slumps, he's going to go that swing is going to come back. That's rote, that's your swing.
Well, was it their former batting instructor who said today's player, if your suggestion doesn't work immediately, if they don't just all of a sudden start to hit when you say okay, elbow in, whatever needs to be, that they revert to what they've always done. Is that generally the case?
That's what I've heard. And it was Eric Chavez that told me that it's hard to be a hitting coach today because all the players, they make money, a lot of money. I mean, minimum wage is over 800 grand. And they have their own private hitting coaches under employ. So you've got one guy got the hitting coach here, and then they got their own on the side. You know, it's, to me, it's, it was always like you got to shut the noise down when you're going bad and you're struggling and you're not confident and you're hearing advice from everybody. It was like, shut it down. Leave me alone. See the ball and hit it. Blah, blah, blah. It's easier said than done. But Eric did tell me he would make suggestions. And if it wasn't instantaneous results, they would bag it. That team that I miss, and I think Met fans do, was the year the Mets under Showalter won the 100 games. That offense fought and battled every at-bat. You didn't see them taking called third strikes. We kind of reverted back to that again. Mm-hmm. And the last couple of years, particularly last year, where that analytics comes in, and I think maybe that's going to be in the forefront. We've got a whole new coaching staff now. And usually it's the manager. No, my day, the manager picked his coaches. This is Stern's coaching staff. He's brought up young guys. It's a very young coaching staff that's come up through the minor league system. And it's going to be a lot more analytics, I feel. It's my opinion. I could be wrong.
All righty. Well, today's show is brought to you by HSS, ranked number one in orthopedics in the U.S. for 16 years in a row by U.S. News and World Report. Learn more at hss.edu. We're coming to you from the Built Ford Tough Studio. We will be back in just a moment on The Fan.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit DetectTheSOS.com to learn more.
We're back with Keith Hernandez taking your phone calls. Richard Neer till 10 o'clock today from the Boomer and Geo Built Ford Tough Studio. Let's go right to Dave in Stonington, Connecticut. You're on The Fan, David.
Good morning, gentlemen, and Merry Christmas to both, and have a safe and happy holiday season. You're talking music. You were talking about the Doobie Brothers earlier. I saw the Doobie Brothers in an outdoor show night concert in Waterford, Connecticut, 2004. One of the best venues I ever saw a show at was Harkness Park in Waterford. And they don't have concerts there anymore. But bringing up shows, do you guys have a show that you went to, never sat down, and it was like the best show you ever saw? I'll give you mine, but I want to hear yours first.
Well, give us yours first.
Saw Ziggy Marley. Ziggy Marley, okay, in 87, opened for In Excess. Never sat down.
Wow. Well, I'm not one to stand at concerts. I don't know about you, Keith, but I prefer being seated.
Oh, I've seen so many good concerts. I saw Dave Mason at the Bottom Line,
mm-hmm.
Buster Poindexter.
Yeah.
Well, that was a great show. So energetic at the Bottom Line. I was a Jethro Tull fan, and I've seen Tull around 6-7 times. Always loved that show. So those are the ones that kind of ring a bell to me. I actually, at the Beacon, was it the Beacon Theater up in the Upper West Side?
Yeah.
Pete Townsend did a solo show, first solo show he did, and I knew Ron Delsner, and I was able to get two tickets to go see that at the theater. And Townsend was just, and that little venue was fantastic.
Now, did he do a lot of Who stuff, or was it mostly solo?
He did, I love his solo stuff as well, his solo albums, but particularly with Ronnie Lane.
Yeah.
He did everything, and he was having fun. It was his first show he did solo without the and in a while, I guess he hadn't done it in a while.
And was he doing Daltrey's vocals? I mean, he was doing the
he was doing the singing. Daltrey
everything.
Wasn't there,
yeah.
And he actually got so excited on a song. He was going. It's a small stage. He was going back and forth, left and right on the stage playing, and he tripped over his cord and he fell down. He never skipped a beat.
Oh, God. Pete Townsend. And he's one of the smartest, most intellectual musicians. I mean, you've probably seen interviews with him where he just, you know, you go, whoa, I'm not sure what this guy's talking about. Let's go to Robbie in Lenox. You're on the Fan. Robbie?
Good morning, Rich. Good morning, Keith. Good morning. This is a treat. This is a treat for me. First of all, I wanted to say, Richard, you know, we go back to the beginning of your days. We've talked many years. My broadcast partner is Ralph Manhattan, your buddy Ralph Romeo. So I want to say hello to Ralph. And and Chad and Cindy down there. Anyway, listen, guys, a couple things. First of all, my next-door neighbor, Keith, was Jim Tuffle when I lived in Greenwich, Connecticut. So I want to ask how Tuff is doing. If you speak to him, Sean's probably 30 now. So I feel old. I'm 60 now, growing up with the Mets and the Yankees, being a Yankee fan. But my first World Series was a 73 series. You got to believe, team. So, but anyway, it was a pleasure to speak to both of you. Keith, I wanted to ask specifically you a couple of things. First of all, I enjoy the broadcast with you guys a lot. I get the satellite. And my question for you is that why is there no emphasis today placed enough on average? Why have we gone away from the great hitter? I mean, why is that happening? And I'd like to know what you think about that as far as why we're so extensively insane when it comes to analytics. It's like I get tired of it. It's like I understand the use of it. But it's ruined the pitcher's battle. It's ruined, you know, I go back to, like, say, the 1991 series. It was the 90, I guess, or the, yeah, I believe it was the series between the Twins and the Braves where you had, you know, Jack Morris pitching 10 innings, and I believe it was John Smoltz or Tommy Clavin pitching, you know, 9 innings in those games. Why have we gone away from that? I remember your teammate, Al Leiter, throwing 104. Well, you and Al played together. It was 142 pitches against the Yankees in the 2000 World Series. Like, he threw 142, and now we're taking guys out for 75. And I've heard you guys, I've heard you and Ronnie and Gary talk about this all the time, as well as the Yankee broadcasters. Why are we babying these guys today so much?
Well, that's you got a lot of questions there. I'll start with, I think the steroid era did immeasurable damage to the game. The players today now, I'm two generations removed It's going to be the 40th anniversary of the Mets in this year. So I'm two generations removed. Everybody is 6'5", 6'6". I mean, it used to be the Philadelphia Phillies had the biggest 6'8", Carlton, Larry Christensen, Wayne Twitchell, Ron Reed. They're all these big 6'7", guys, 6'6". Today, it's the norm. They're bigger and stronger. They wanted the home run. They've made the ballpark smaller, and which doesn't add to having a team like the 80 Cardinals where you have speed, which is very exciting to watch someone scoring first, going first to third, scoring on a double from first. So I think we got into all that launch angle. I can tell you Tim Tuffle, he was in the minor leagues. He actually heard – he was in Brooklyn, and that's an A-ball. He heard a hitting coach tell a young kid that when you're 0-2 in the big leagues, the pitchers are just too good, so you just got to hope for a hanger. So just let it wail and try to put – do damage. That's the word, do damage. And to me, that is – Tim said it, he would floored him, and he couldn't say anything. And that to me is shocking because that's negative. That's not a positive reinforcement right there. What, the pitchers are too good? He also heard a pitching coach say, "Hey, you're throwing 91 in the big leagues. That's not going to cut it. You gotta gear it up. You gotta go 98. You're talking to an A-ball kid. It's just terrible, 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 terrible. And you know, the damage part is to me. Ninth inning, tie ball game, runner on second base, base hit up the middle, ground ball, whatever, line drive. That's damage. It doesn't have to be the grand slam or the home run. So we kind of got away where strikeouts, to your point, it does. The batting average is not that important. I made a point when Jeff McNeil won the batting title, it was kind of poo-pooed. I said, no. I went on the air and I said, that's a big deal. I was praising Jeff and you won the batting title. That's something to be proud of. And then you've got statistics that are out there that, you know, analytics has a lot of good in it, but you just don't want to get overblown with it. And I know I'm going long here, but I had to look sometimes for batting average. It's not in the stats. It's war, war plus, whatever you want to do it. And that's all fine and dandy. You got to have men get on base. And the other philosophy, I know I'm going long, Rich. It's hard with two outs to put bunch together three straight hits to get a run. Three singles. Takes three singles to get a run. Okay, it happens. Yeah. You have those ninth inning rallies. And when you have those kind of rallies late and you come from behind, with you bunch those hits together, those are energizing wins. That gets you to get the team to get hot.
Well, the guy that mystifies me is this Luis Arroyas, I guess is the way you pronounce his name, who wins batting titles, singles hitter, you know, not a big power hitter.
But Arise.
Arise, right. He gets on base, and nobody wants him. They trade him. He's a free agent. Nobody's interested. And to me, that's, you know, leadoff hitter. Get on base. He walks. And he's not a great defender, but why wouldn't you want a guy like that on your team who can get on base constantly, knock in runs when there's somebody on second? Why don't they value that kind of player anymore?
He doesn't run great. So if you got a leadoff hitter, it's not like Lou Brock.
Right.
You know, Ricky Henderson. He's not that. I mean, he's a good hitter, and he's really a negative in the field. I'd have to see him play every day. I see the Padres six games, you know, and he could be in a slump, you know. And I remember one game my dad called me. I was always killed the Cubs, and I loved playing at Wrigley. And Harry Carey was doing the game, and my dad called me after the game. I was in a slump, and I had a bad series. And Harry Carey in the third game said, "Boy, I've never seen Keith Hernandez look so bad at the plate." It happens. I was in a slump.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. You can catch a guy, especially in football. You see a quarterback have a bad game, and you go, "Oh, this guy's no good." And then, why? The MVP, why? You know, guys have bad games. I mean, Jackson Dart, last game with the Giants, was not very good. He was like 7 for 13 or something, less than 100 yards. But Yeah. Doesn't mean he's not going to be great in the future.
I like him, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, yeah. He's got to dial it back a little bit, though. All right, we're going to take a quick break and be right back with our final segment with Keith Hernandez right here on The Fan. You know, I'm sure you've had this too. It's so hard to get presents for people now, you know, because you want to get them something nice, something they want, but generally speaking, you ask them what they want and they don't tell you, and it's really difficult. Like, you know, I'm thinking of what I got my wife for Christmas, and it was not a substantial thing, you know.
Well, we growing up as a kid, once we got away from the youth and Santa Claus and then my dad, we just stopped giving presents. So I went my whole adolescence and youth not buying presents for my brother and my mom and dad, and but they didn't either. And then you move on to your life and other people come into your life and they're buying presents and I didn't know what to do.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, like we got a present recently and it's something we absolutely positively can't use. Don't want it. Not your stuff. But, you know, we got this thing and the person called and I said, well, I wasn't sure if you'd like it. And what do you say? You say, well, you're right. I didn't like it. No, you say, no, thank you very much. Yes. I really appreciate it. And kind of dodge the question, right?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Let's talk to Lenny in Port Jefferson. You're on The Fan. Lenny?
Good morning, Keith. I have a music question for Keith. There's a very rare music video of Martha Reeves singing a very difficult song, I'm Ready for Love, on YouTube. You're in the video, 18 seconds, sitting at a table with a beautiful young woman with a black-brimmed hat. The video does not have any information. So what was the venue? Where was it? What was the month and the year? And who is the beautiful woman that was sitting next to you at the table? And your recollections of the concert.
Okay, well, Keith is giving me like, what? Ready for Love, was it?
Martha Reeves?
By Martha Reeves, yes. He's sitting at a table with the beautiful woman.
I've never been in a music video.
It's not a video. It's a YouTube thing of the concert, and it flashes to you for like 2 seconds. You're sitting at a table.
Oh, okay. So he's at a Martha Reeves concert.
The video. Yeah, you're at a concert watching it.
And I don't have any recollection of going to a Martha Reeves concert. Interesting.
Martha Reeves singing, I'm ready for love.
No, I was at one Rainforest concert where they had a bunch of different stars, performers, which was a great concert, Sting's Rainforest concert at, I can't think of it, on Fifth Ave, Midtown, the famous venue. But anyway, I have no recollection of that, to be honest with you. So,
well, we'll have to look it up when we get off the air.
I'm very curious. I'm definitely going to look it up.
Yeah, let's do that. Martin in Guilford, Connecticut is here. Martin?
Hey, guys. Great morning. I'm enjoying Christmas as much as I ever have. By the way, very briefly, the best show I ever saw was the Doobies at about New Year's Eve, 77 or 78. Tom Johnson wasn't with the band. You probably know he had some issues that he had to deal with. He just came out and did the encore, but a 20-minute version of Listen to the Music. It was insane. It was just brilliant at the Fabulous Forum.
I love that Clear as the Driven Snow song on the Captain and Me, when it was like a sleigh ride with the bells in the end and when he went the crescendo in the end and how that song picked up steam. That was one of my favorite.
Yes, slow-moving song, South City Midnight Woman, does it for me. But moving along here, Keith and Richard, if you would mind settling an argument between my friend and me, and he's a Giants fan and I'm a Dodger fan, so you know where we stand. If you had to pick the newly inducted Jeff Kent between him and Steve Garvey for your team, what would be the choice?
Well, the difference is that there's one's a second baseman and one's a first baseman, so that's the separation there. The fact that middle infielders, and that's changed now of late, obviously, with the Cal Ripken was probably the first one. Ernie Banks was really the first power-hitting shortstop. And so it's hard to make a comparison there, because Kent, if you look at his numbers, they're impressive. I mean, it's home runs. Home runs is so important in the Hall of Fame. It always has been. Maybe too much, but you can't take away what he did in his career, and you can't say it's because he had Barry Bonds, and he did it. And I didn't realize his numbers were that good. I thought he was deserving.
And Garvey?
For some reason, he was the best clutch hitter of my generation that I played against, and he was like maybe 6-7 years older than me. But every year, year in, year out, he was the one player I did not want up at the plate where it was a late and close with an RBI situation to beat you. Did not want him up.
And until you came along, he was the glove at first base, right? I mean, he was...
Yeah, he won four in a row, and I unseated him. And he really was the third baseman. He moved to first base because he hurt his arm. He had no arm. He couldn't even throw to second base a lot on ground balls because he had hurt his arm. Mm-hmm. He was originally a third baseman.
Steve Garvey. All right, let's go to Tom and Mystic. You're on the fan, Tom.
Merry Christmas, gentlemen. I could talk music with the two of you. You mentioned Jethro Tull. Unfortunately, Mick Abrams passed, was in the paper today. He was the original guitarist. It's too bad. Spring training is 46 and a half days.
Oh, don't remind me.
Okay. And I don't know if either one of you played wiffle ball when you were a kid, but I got a friend we call Bobby V. It's not the Bobby V, but he's our Bobby V. And he told me that rule with the ghost runner or the zombie runner, or whatever you want to call it, came from wiffle ball. And, personally, I would rather see my team, which happens to be the Metropolitans, tie a game after 11 or 12 of normal baseball than lose to a wiffle ball rule. And my question is, why are there no ties in baseball?
Okay. There's no crying in baseball and no ties in baseball.
I have no idea. It's just the way it is. You got extra innings. I've never really been curious why. And where it started. So I played wiffle ball when I was young, and it was very popular. But my dad, because the wiffle ball bat was like a feather, if you recall, it's plastic.
Right.
My dad wouldn't let us bat left-handed. Gary and I played and competed against each other, and he made us bat right-handed because he felt the feather bat would screw up our swing, get us to swing up, because you try to hit home runs. So we had to hit right-handed, which made it fun. And actually, we got pretty good. So,
see, I love to pitch wiffle ball because I could start a breaking pitch, 10 feet behind somebody's head and break it over the plate.
Well, I love to throw the riser and the sinker when you throw sidearm and hit the holes up or down.
Yeah. Maybe they should try that now in Major League Baseball. Well, we're done. Boy, time went fast. Keith, thanks again for joining us on Christmas and Thanksgiving. And, in the future, we'll see what happens.
Well, maybe we'll do it again, But maybe it'll become an annual thing. Well, Boomer's getting old. He needs a break.
I think he's younger than we are. And for Boomer and Gio, Rich and Eric, Keith Hernandez, thank you for listening and Merry Christmas. And we'll catch each other down the road somewhere. Don't know where, but don't know why, but we'll see you then. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great, great holiday.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. WFAN, New York.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing, but the money still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.